This is in the news for May 9th, 2006. I'm Scott Berguin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. First up today from oneworld.net and taken from Common Dreams News Center at commondreams.org. Brazil officially starts first uranium enrichment facility. This is dated May 9th. Out of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Brazil has inaugurated its first uranium enrichment facility to produce the type of fuel for nuclear power plants that Iran is running into trouble for attempting to produce. There are strong suspicions that the objective of the Iranian nuclear program is to eventually build a bomb, but Brazil has managed to assure the international community its intentions are industrial and commercial, not military. On Friday, Industrias Nucleares do Brasil officially launched the first two centrifuges needed for uranium enrichment at a facility in Resende in the state of Rio de Janeiro. The centrifuges, which are already operating, have the capacity to produce 2% of the uranium needed to run Brazil's two nuclear power plants. At the inauguration ceremony, Brazilian Science and Technology Minister Sergio Resende told the assembled officials and media of Brazil's commitment to the peaceful use of nuclear power. The Brazilian Constitution bans the military use of nuclear energy, and the country has signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. No objections to Brazil's uranium enrichment program have been heard from the United States. In April 2004, the Brazilian government denied access for the IAEA inspectors to the Resende facility and refused to let IAEA inspectors see equipment in the plant. Citing a need to protect proprietary information, the government had built walls around parts of the facility and draped covers over equipment. By November 2004, the IAEA was able to reach an agreement in principle with the Brazilian government on a safeguards approach to verify the enrichment facilities in Brazil at the Resende facility. This approach enables the IAEA to do credible inspections, but at the same time addresses Brazil's need to shield proprietary designs inside the facility. Built at a cost of $172 million, the plant will be capable of enriching natural uranium to less than 5% uranium-235, an isotope needed to fuel power reactors. In order to make a bomb, natural uranium must be enriched to 95% uranium-235. There's more on this article at oneworld.net. And again, we got that from commondreams.org. Up next from Agence France-Presse, also dated May 9th, China's cancer villages pay heavy price for economic progress. This is also taken from commondreams.org. Sitting on his bed in his Spartan house in one of China's so-called cancer villages, a 77-year-old retired cadre sheds tears as he speaks of the pollution he believes is killing him. Quote, "I just hope I can die sooner. I gave my life to the Communist Party, yet I have nothing now. I have nothing to leave to my children," end quote, the man said, tears rolling down his cheeks. The man, who requested anonymity out of fear of government reprisals, was diagnosed with lung cancer several years ago, which he believes was caused by years of breathing in the local chemical-filled air and drinking contaminated water. The man lives in Luikuanzhang village, which, along with neighboring Zaitatao village in Tianjin municipality, 120 kilometers southeast of Beijing, rose from poor areas into economic successes after scores of chemical factories moved in two decades ago. But the industry that brought the village's wealth and employment also ended up destroying the environment and is widely believed to have ultimately cost the health and lives of many residents. Locals say over 200 residents in the two villages have been diagnosed with diseases including bone, lung, liver, and breast cancers, while a handful of children are suffering from leukemia. A report on the People's Daily website quoting Tianjin Health Authority said the rates of cancer in Luikuanzhang and Zaitatao were 1,313 and 2,032 per 100,000 people, way above the national average of 70 per 100,000 people. According to the report, high levels of bacteria, fluoride, and cancer-causing hydroxybenzene that exceeded government limits have been found in Luikuanzhang's water. Even after the government ordered scores of polluting factories to close and declared the local water safe enough to drink, smaller factories continue to operate secretly as local officials turn a blind eye, villagers say. Residents say they are simply helpless to fight the factories or seek compensation as they have no legal recourse. There's more on this at commondreams.org. Again, that's from Agence France-Presse, dated May 19th. Next up, from the Associated Press, also taken from commondreams.org. This is written by Steven Singer. Letter claims Geronimo's remains stolen by Yale's Skull and Bones Society. A Yale University historian has uncovered a 1918 letter that seems to lend validity to the lore that Yale University's ultra-secret Skull and Bones Society swiped the skull of American Indian leader Geronimo. The letter, written by one member of Skull and Bones to another, purports that the skull and some of the Indian leader's remains were spirited from his burial plot in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, to a stone tomb in New Haven that serves as the club's headquarters. According to Skull and Bones legend, members, including President Bush's grandfather Prescott Bush, dug up Geronimo's grave when a group of Army volunteers from Yale were stationed at the fort during World War I. Geronimo died in 1909. According to the letter written by Winter Meade, quote, "The skull of the worthy Geronimo the Terrible, exhumed from its tomb at Fort Sill by your club, is now safe inside the tomb together with his well-worn femurs, bit, and saddle horn," end quote. But Meade was not at Fort Sill, and researcher Mark Wortman, who found the letter last fall, said Monday he is skeptical the bones are actually those of the famed Indian fighter. Wortman said, quote, "What I think we could probably say is that they recovered some skull and bones and other materials from a grave at Fort Sill. Historically, it may be impossible to prove it's Geronimo's. They believe it's from Geronimo," end quote. Harlan Geronimo, the great-grandson of Geronimo, said he has been looking for a lawyer to sue the U.S. Army, which runs Fort Sill. Discovery of the letter could help, he said. Harlan Geronimo said, quote, "It's keeping it alive, and now it makes me really want to confront the issue with my attorneys. If we get the remains back and find that, for instance, that bones are missing, you know who to blame," end quote. A portion of the letter and an accompanying story were posted Monday on the Yale Alumni Magazine's website. Only 15 Yale seniors are asked to join Skull and Bones each year. Alumni include Senator John Kerry, President William Howard Taft, numerous members of Congress, media leaders, Wall Street financiers, the scions of wealthy families, and agents in the CIA. Members swear an oath of secrecy about the group and its strange rituals, which are said to include an initiation rite in which would-be members kiss a skull. Again, that's Associated Press, dated today, written by Stephen Singer. And finally today, three short pieces from the latest issue of High Country News at hcn.org. These are all written by Jody Peterson. "There's gold in them thar hills and tailings in that thar lake. The Army Corps of Engineers confirmed its decision to let a mining company dump millions of tons of mine waste into an Alaskan lake. Last fall, environmentalists sued the agency to revoke Corps Alaska's permit, which allows it to put about 4.5 million tons of tailings into Lower Slate Lake over the next 14 years. The Clean Water Act banned such disposal in 1972, but in 2002, a rule change reclassified mining waste as quote-unquote fill, which can legally be dumped into waterways. Also, for the fourth time since 2000, Colorado saw a split-estate bill go down in flames. This year's bill got as far as passing the House of Representatives. It would have required energy companies to negotiate with landowners before drilling and to pay for damages they cause. But the bill died under heavy opposition from the energy industry and arguments over whether damage assessments should include concerns like quality of life. A Glenwood Springs real estate agent, John Gorman, has filed a ballot initiative that would put the issue to voters statewide in November. And finally, in this piece from High Country News, a haven for rock climbers, birders, hikers, and American Indians is on the chopping block again. In early April, Arizona Senator John Kyle, Republican, introduced a bill that would trade Oak Flat, a popular recreational area in the Tonto National Forest, to Resolution Copper Company, which wants to develop a copper mine on the site. In exchange, the company would provide private land in other areas. A version of the bill floated last year was shot down. The new bill creates a state park in the Tam O'Shanter Mountains to make up for the lost climbing area and adds another 880 acres of private land. Again, these three pieces written by Jody Peterson of High Country News at hcn.org. This has been In the News for May 9th, 2006. I'm Scott Berguin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. We'll talk to you next time.